Welcome to Bring On the Mess, a show where we have real conversations about how to embrace life's messiness and how we find ways to show up and uncover our true selves. I'm Beth Ann Dorman. I'm the CEO at For All Seasons.
And I'm Lisa Lee, the Chief Clinical Officer here at For All Seasons.
You know, we don't usually talk about the topic that we're going to talk about today.
Well, we talk about it a lot,
but you all have not heard us talk about this topic, so we're bringing you something live and new. We're going to talk about food.
Yeah. Food and our relationship to food, and because we all have a relationship to food, we need food to survive. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be really troubling when we have maybe not the greatest relationship with food.
And so often when we think about what we see in the media and when we listen to the circle of friends that we spend time with, or you hear conversations, especially because we have young, about to be teenage boys, you hear about how food shows up across lifespans. You hear about the importance of how you're feeding your children X, Y, or Z when they're babies. And then there is the sort of that shift when you're in middle school and people start talking, I don't know about your boys, but I certainly know that my boys are worried about how tall they are and how thin they are. And you look at social media and you look at how critical and how differently food shows up in some conversations when it comes to sort of the rich and famous. And then as moms, you look at, oh, this is post-baby weight compared to pre-baby weight. And how much are you working out? And, oh, it's a dad bod. That was like the big thing at Father's Day this year.
Totally. It's
like the dad bod t-shirts are everywhere. So some of the movies that we've seen, like the double size movie about McDonald's, and I just think it's everywhere. There is such thoughts that show up on social media and in the media in general and just in conversations about how food affects our self-image, how it affects the way that we sort of function as humans.
So this topic can be really complex because it's the intake of food that we're putting in, and so how we end up looking because of that caloric intake is, I think, when you talk about body image, am I starting to get overweight because I'm overeating, or what am I doing about it? So do I start to have what I would call disordered eating, which would be more of a mental health diagnosis like the bulimia and anorexia or binge eating? And, or is it just I am addicted to sugar? Mm-hmm. So there is...
I am not.
Oh, you are not. I am. We'll have a conversation about that for sure, because there's a real funny story around that. But I think the most important thing that we want to say for this, or an important thing that we want to say for this podcast, is that this is a complex issue. And while we will try to hit many points, there's so much that we can talk to in relation to how we have a relationship with food.
Right. And I think it also goes to say, and is important as we talk about the lens in which we come from, we are not nutritionists by training.
Correct.
We are not dietitians. And some of the things that we will share will be our own personal experiences. It will be some knowledge that we have, but we are not coming to this conversation as nutritionists or dietitians.
No, I appreciate that. That's a really important thing to say. And why don't we start with your comment about you are not addicted to sugar, but I am totally addicted to sugar. So there's this lovely story. Beth Ann was, you were...
I was doing a challenge.
Yeah, challenge. Challenge, that's what the word was.
So there was a gym that I belonged to that did a 24-day fix, they called it. And I was doing a workout program, but then there was also like the food challenge part of it. And part of the challenge was, for me, I'm someone who tends not to eat enough because I get busy and maybe I'll skip lunch. Like we were just sitting here talking, my husband's going to bring us salads because neither of us have eaten and we're starving. But sometimes like the powering through or forgetting to eat is my biggest issue. I need to eat more. And so in this challenge, you could not eat sugar. And for me, that's super easy. I could care less about sugar. I'm not a big sweets person. I'm not a big dessert person. And so I came to you and said, it's from time to time, we will challenge one another. And I'm like, you want to do this with me? Well, you can tell them how long you lasted.
She's laughing because I think I made it potentially 26 hours or something
just
like that.
Over 24 hours.
Yeah, it was not very long because for me, I have a huge sweet tooth, and that's something that, you know, at nighttime I always make popcorn with chocolate chips. That's my typically my go-to. Mm-hmm. And there is, so let's talk a little bit about that. Is yes, there is a sugar addiction there. I know that for any of you who have an impulse to eat, my experience was I just couldn't take my mind off of it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't drink alcohol, I don't eat meat, and those impulses were not like that. But when I didn't have my popcorn with chocolate chips, there was like this impulse or this thing that was calling to me saying, come eat me.
Come I would me like for dessert.
Yes. And it really could be anything. So it could be ice cream or cake. Mm-hmm. I'm just really a sweet lover. And the other part of that is, as I get to know myself more, I also realize that there's a little bit of routine that goes in that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a little bit of boredom. Sometimes for me, it's a little bit of comfort. Like I'm having a feeling mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, I need my popcorn. Because it's like the end of the day. And so there's, again, that's that complexity of the relationship with food. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is an addiction, which my body says, go get that. Right. There is this impulse to eat. And that could be for a variety of reasons. It could be for comfort. It could be for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. And I think the piece that we always sort of talk through is that what works for one doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. work for another. So you choose not to eat meat. I like to eat meat, but I could take it or leave it. Like, I am more vegetarian in my diet with fish and vegetables than I am with, like, I'm not a meat and potatoes kind of guy,
right,
sort of kind of gal. But for me, the sugar was just never anything. Like, when I was growing up, my mom would make me chocolate mousse and I would have like a thing of pudding for birthday. I never had a cake. Like, it's just not my thing. But I think the piece that's really important that I think back to as we are having this conversation is that we've talked in prior podcasts about what works for one doesn't always work for another. And part of what makes a food relationship fun between us is that we support each other. Like, I will send you sludgy pictures because you love your ice cream with a million things on top of it. So when I see those images, I automatically think of you, and I'd rather have a piece of celery than that for myself. But I always support you in your sort of what you're doing. And I also think it's good to know that we can be sort of experimenting. And so, yeah, you gave it a go for 26 hours. I was super proud of you that you made it that long.
I was so proud of myself. Well, and so you bring up a really good point. And so my mom has done an incredible job of working really hard to lose some weight. And, you know, part of my role in that is to support her. Mm-hmm. So whether that's she's sending me a text message saying, oh, I've lost this weight. And it's not, I'm so proud of you. It's, Mom, you should be so proud of yourself,
right,
because you've worked really hard. Or if it's somebody who goes for a donut and I know that they're trying to work on their weight, I might say, can you tell me what that's about? Or mm-hmm. do you think that you really need that? And I think we have to be really careful about how we do that, because food can be a really sensitive issue and cause shame. Okay. I know without a doubt that anything that you do, like, it comes from a place of love. I was on a Zoom meeting and there was a woman who's like, Lisa, you're always eating. And part of that is like what you had said, which is sometimes we're eating in between meetings, mm-hmm. which, by the way, let me just be very clear. As a mental health professional, I'm calling myself out on
right.
it. That is not the healthiest strategy ever.
I told you right now, we were not dietitians or nutritionists.
We're not necessarily even doing
yes.
the right thing.
Right.
A lot of times I will tell people, take good care of yourself. And that's something that I know that I have to get better right. at, is taking a pause to eat mindfully and not always in meetings. I know that that woman didn't mean any harm, but if that was a sensitive issue for me, if food is a sensitive issue for me, that might have caused a lot of shame mm-hmm. and could have put me in a bad place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think not only is there the unintentional shaming that can come from comments, but there's also when that then moves you into a sort of a body shaming conversation or there may be family members or there may be children in your lives where I know that there is a relative of mine who grew up living in a household where she was shamed because she was of a larger stature. And there was a lot of questioning about the way she was eating and what she was eating, and you have to stop eating. And she now identifies as someone who has an eating disorder, or disordered eating, as we talked about at the beginning. And it really did affect her relationship with food, in that it moved to her to a place where she started to hide when she was eating, because she was in shame a lot. Yeah. And when you live in a household where there's shame associated with food, that's where we are really hoping that our conversation today, in that one instance, if we can help people think about how they're talking about it, and sort of the acceptance of, I'm the worst person in the world, and I say this to my friends all the time, and I'm glad you told me that your mom just lost weight, because I don't keep track of it at all. And so I don't even notice when people have lost weight. I don't notice when people gain weight. So I always say to my friends, I'll be at a social event and someone will say, oh my gosh, you lost weight, you look great. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, I'm such a jerk that I didn't tell them how great they look. But that's the thing that just doesn't matter to me at all. So I might not even notice that your mom lost weight, not because your mom doesn't look great, but just because I don't clock that kind of stuff. But there are some people who absolutely clock that kind of stuff. And so it can be a dangerous slippery slope, as we are talking about raising young people, especially about how our comments and how the environment shapes that relationship with food.
Boy, a couple little avenues. So let me first close the one, which is, you know, how we support people is having a conversation with them. Mm-hmm. And if you're somebody who is struggling, it's finding those people in your life. So if I was trying to try something different, if I really was trying to get off of sugar, which, by the way, I don't know that sure, I ever will, because it's just not something I'm interested in, unless a doctor said, Lisa, you got
to
stop.
I know I said yesterday to her, as we were preparing for today's podcast, you are really going to be in a lot of trouble if you ever become diagnosed with diabetes and you're not able to eat the sugar in the ways that you love to eat the sugar.
Yes, and because that is something that is a part of my life. And so for those people who have to modify their diets because of health reasons, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot of work. And I appreciate the potential struggles that come along with that. And so if I need support, I have to communicate what that support looks like and the words that could be helpful, and to be able to say back, which is hard, well, that wasn't really helpful. Right. My mom reached out to me, and so it was really important for her mm-hmm. to be able to say, here's what I've done, and I can support her in that. Other people, like you said, might not want that, or might not be that important, because you're right, we all are more than just what our bodies look mm-hmm. like. My hope is, what a great place we could be in if it could get to that place where we're seeing past that. The other thing that you mentioned, and I have the privilege of working with so many amazing clients and people, and I've got amazing friends in my life, where we get to have these conversations about how our histories play a role in our relationship with food. So whether it was I grew up poor and I was ravenous for food, or taking mm-hmm. food because I had to get it because I was starving, and that created
something.
Because
you might be hungry later, and
yes.
who knew what was going to be available.
Right, so we create patterns with food early on. It could be that maybe somebody was overweight because of genetics, and maybe they don't get the kind of foods, because you say this a lot in our podcast, you know, we come at this from middle-class, privileged white ladies, mm-hmm. And we get to buy certain foods for our families that might not be the option for all families. And so that creates patterns or, you know, habits. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, one of the biggest things that I try to be very aware of is when we have young kids who are looking at us or towards us, our comments about ourselves mm-hmm. are so critical. And so if I am a mom of a female, of a daughter, and I'm saying, oh my gosh, my stomach's so fat, or I look so horrible in this, or I've got to go on a diet, my daughter is hearing that. And I'm saying this as a mom of a son, so is my son. Mm-hmm. Because you said that early on.
Yeah.
My kids, because middle school in particular is
it's torturous.
Right. It's when you're finding, how do I fit in? Where do mm-hmm. I belong? And there is something to how I look. And so it is not just young girls, but it is also boys mm-hmm. who struggle with, how do I look? Do I have enough muscles? Do I have a six pack? Yeah. They're looking towards us, and we have to be very careful about how we
talk about ourselves and how we talk to our kids.
And I think one of the things you just said, when we talk about the environment for young girls and then we bring in the boys, because when we think about disordered eating and when you think about this as an issue, I believe that most of society would come alongside of my comment that we typically think about it in girls and
yes.
in women.
Yes.
We don't always necessarily think about disordered eating in boys. And I use my youngest son as a really good example who, you know, fifth grade was hard. It came after COVID. He was sitting, you know, at about 4'8" at that time in terms of height. And he was upwards of like 130 pounds. And he came home and he said, "Mom, all the kids in school are calling me fat." Because he had all of a sudden started going wider until last October happened when he grew
so tall
7 inches and lost 20 pounds. By doing nothing other than the kid just grew and all of a sudden he came into his now 12-year-old body. But the talk that had to happen when he got home from school was super important because he suddenly became, quote-unquote, the fat kid at the age of 10 and a half in fifth grade when kids were really making fun of him. And had the response been, "You have to go on a diet," that really could have been detrimental to his understanding of what the relationship with food looks like. What our conversation became about was, well, let's talk about ways that we can eat healthier, and let's talk about ways that we can get outside and exercise more. And you're fine just the way you are. Mm-hmm. Your body is exactly where it needs to be, and I know that you don't believe me in this moment, but it's not always going to be exactly like this. And we look back now and we laugh because I'm only 5'2". He's like towering over me at the age of 12.
And he's towering over me, I know.
He's got these size 12 feet for a 12-year-old boy. I mean, he's going to be really tall. And so he's now able to understand how sometimes it's like the power loading of food before your body goes through a big growth spurt. And those are the kinds of conversations that were never had in my household when I was growing up. And
right.
I had two brothers. This was never a discussion. What was a discussion in my house was just staying trim and fit. That was all we grew up with.
It's funny because when I look back on my growing up, my parents were always like, "Your body is exactly how it's supposed to be." And so I was actually pretty lucky because I'm thinking my dad was such a big proponent of that. Mm-hmm. I don't even know why he knew or how he knew, but he just knew to just be like, "You're exactly how you're supposed to be." What I remember, though, and I wasn't really good verbally about this, was because I was one of those kids, particularly teenagers, where I'm fine, everything's mm-hmm. fine. I was not vulnerable whatsoever, which I don't know many teenagers who are, but I was trying to figure out how do I fit in and what do I do in order to figure out how do I fit in or where do I belong. I'm comparing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And my group of girlfriends, because there's still 5 of us total that were still from elementary school, and what a blessing that is. And when we were growing up, we all had different body types. We had athletic, we had like super tall and skinny, we had a little bit shorter and skinny, we had strong, like there were so many different body types, but it was, what do they look like and why don't I look like them?
Right.
And
right.
So I love what you said to your son, and I do the same thing because I'm so mindful mm-hmm. of there is so much comparison that goes on out there, and body shaming, whether it's amongst peers or, and I'll say unintentionally with adults to our kids, is huge.
Absolutely. And something that we don't always recognize in the moment, and we may, it's those best intentioned comments where you really think that you may be helping someone along. So I go back to what you said in the beginning about how you say it, and then also for the person that's being said to, being able to create a space where they can find their voice and say, "That's not helpful."
Right.
I think that piece, we don't always have that dialogue when it comes to the understanding of food and how it shows up. Because here's the thing, food is something that we have to have. That's not an option to be able to survive. And so how it looks and the food selections that happen, you talk about the lens that we come from, we talk about the cultures. Culturally, food is different. You might say, well, if we all lived in Greece, everybody would be this size and that size because they eat really well compared to how we eat. No, carbs aren't bad. I always say when somebody says to me, oh, you know, there was an article that says that for instance, like, red meat isn't good for you. I'm like, great. And so next week it's going to be really good for you and you should eat twice as much of it. Because right. there's lots of conflicting messages too. And so it's really, in my mind, sometimes our food relationship, and you and I talk about this a lot, it's just about moderation.
Right.
Because when you try to cut something out that you really like we led today's podcast with the story about you cutting out sugar, I could care less if you cut out sugar. It's not my thing. You tell me that I can't have a salad every day, I am really going to struggle and have a hard time. So it's just a matter of trying to figure out how we don't overeat or undereat, but just be able to maintain in a healthy way.
I say to my boys all the time, in order to be healthy, you have to get enough sleep, you have to exercise, you have to eat right, and you have to watch the things that you're saying to yourself, because what you say mm-hmm. matters. And mm-hmm. so if we can create a combination of those things, I believe that that could be helpful. And absolutely, everything in moderation. But again, what's going to work for me or my family is going to be different for other families, because there's different experiences, different histories. You brought up culture. Like, I grew up in an Italian family, and so... Like, everyone wants to eat, so just eat.
Just keep eating.
And so the association could potentially be eating is love, eating is mm-hmm. how you fill yourself. And so we just have to be aware of those messages. So I would say, for these little nuggets as we start to wrap up, be aware of the messages around food that you received. Be aware of the messages you still tell yourself when you're talking to yourself about food. Mm-hmm. Be aware of how fast or how slow you're eating. Those things all matter.
I remember growing up with my grandmother, who has passed, and she was just my heart and soul. And I remember going to her house, and I was there all the time when I was growing up. And she would take 45 minutes to eat dinner.
Oh.
And it was not about, like, chew your food 23 times on each side. It was about, if you set your fork down and you have conversation during dinner, that's really important time. And when you were saying about food could be a showing of love, I think about, like, when we gather in homes, we gather more times than not in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so there is a great space for food in our culture. I think about holidays, I think about just gatherings and get-togethers. Typically, you don't have a gathering or a get-together that isn't centered around a meal, unless you're intentional about saying, we're not feeding people, hold the party from 3 to 4:30.
Right.
So I think those are the bright spots. Because I think the one thing we haven't talked about that is important is, there may be somebody out listening and saying, but I really do want to work in the way that Lisa's mom is working, and I want to lose weight, or I want to eat better, or I want to make a change. And I think one of the things that's really important is, when those moments come up, we're doing it because we want mm-hmm. that change, not because someone has told us we need it, or because we think we have to shift in a way because it's what is projected out on social media or whatever. So I think those are the moments where food and the relationship with food and how we want our bodies to show up has to be about that healthy lens, not about I'm chasing someone else's stature, when you were talking about your girlfriends.
Yeah, and let me take that a step further to say, we also have to be mindful of why we want that mm-hmm. and what's our motivation behind that. Because, and I will say, just as a practicing clinician, oftentimes what I find is that when the motivation is internal, it's definitely helpful. And sometimes we need a little bit of help. Mm-hmm. And so while my mom was able to do that on her own, I have plenty of people who come into my office to say, I'm really struggling with this. And can we work on a better understanding of why I do that? Maybe I'm eating more because I'm depressed, or mm-hmm. maybe I'm eating more because I have a fear or need control. There's so many reasons. And so knowing that, if you've been a little bit unsuccessful, maybe it's just getting a nutritionist this time around. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's going to a doctor that specializes. Maybe it's going to a clinician that can help, again, understand the patterns and create some different ways of thinking and behavioral strategies. So there's lots of options out mm-hmm. there. But I think the important thing is to know, I'm wanting to make a change and I can do this on my own, or, hey, you know what? I really do need to reach out for help with this.
Yeah. So I hope that this has been helpful for you. We look forward to being with you in the next couple of weeks, and enjoy your special food today and figure out how food shows up for you.